My name's Glenn Hill.
And I'm Jacob Meyer.
And welcome to Tactical Tennis Podcast. And this week we are going to talk about, or try to answer the question of, how much trouble is Novak Djokovic actually in?
Yes, Novak Djokovic is in trouble.
Yes, I mean, I know it seems kind of crazy to say. I mean, here he is, number two in the world, defending, I guess now, French Open champion. He doesn't have the defending Australian Open title anymore. But yeah, kind of funny to talk about a guy number two in the world as being, quote unquote, in trouble. But I think we have to say that he is. I mean, he's gone from being an absolutely dominant number one with this massive gap in the points ratings to, and you know, basically being virtually unbeatable. And now he's lost number one ranking, and he's in a little bit of a kind of a relative free fall.
So I want to start this off because there's so many places that we could go. We haven't actually talked about Novak, first of all.
Well, we haven't talked about him here.
Here, obviously. I mean, the idea that we haven't talked about Novak is ridiculous. But where I'd like to start is, how far down the rankings is it plausible for him to actually go?
Oof.
Like, are we looking at a Guillermo Coria situation? I find, you know,
wow.
Or
okay.
Are we looking at, like, you know, Federer only played half the season and fell to like number 16 or 17 and then comes back and wins the slam? I mean, like, what?
Just, yeah,
you know, because
okay.
We say he's in trouble and we'll talk about that and make the case that he clearly is. But are we talking about, you know, oh, he's going to be number five, or are we saying, like, you know, he might not be a top 10, top 20 player?
Yeah, I don't think we're at a point yet in this. I mean, let's put it in perspective, right? Obviously, like I said, he's still number two. He's got 9,735 points in the ATP rankings, right? He's basically a little under 2,000 points behind Andy Murray. The next closest person at number three, Stan Wawrinka, has 5,000. So he's got almost double Stan's points in the ATP rankings, right? And then from there, it all comes up very quickly. I mean, you know, you've got Stan at just over five, Milos, you know, 100 points behind him, then Kay just 300 points behind that. You know, I mean, it's a very tight comping, and then you've got Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic, who are still, in terms of points, significantly ahead of everybody. However, you know, obviously, when we go back and look at what it is that Novak is defending,
That's where the points come from.
That's where the points come from, and that's where things start to get interesting, because, you know, obviously he hasn't started off this year particularly well. He went from, you know, being the defending Australian Open champion to being bounced in the second round. So that's a ton of points dropped off there. But, you know, if we look at the stuff that he had won, you know, kind of over this upcoming stretch last year, you know, I mean, a quarterfinals in Dubai, not super exciting for him, but then, you know, he wins the Indian Wells Masters event. He wins Miami. He wins Miami.
Which, by the way, is one of the hardest things to do in tennis.
Yes, winning those two back-to-back. And then probably because of that, bounces out in the second round at Monte Carlo, you know, three sets to Vasselli. Not a huge deal given what he'd just done. Then turns around again and wins the Masters in Madrid. Then turns around and loses in the final of the Rome Masters to Andy Murray. Turns around and wins Roland Garros before, and this is where we start to say Novak's in trouble. Since winning Roland Garros, things haven't been the same.
I mean, he was like unbeatable for those 3 months.
Right.
And right now, I mean, he did not look unbeatable against Clizon and Acapulco in the first round, and he's got Del Potro next.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk briefly. I mean, so he's got a ton of points to defend. So it is conceivable, if he continues the stretch that he's currently having, that, you know, he could drop in the rankings. Like that 4,000 point gap that he has over Raonic could be gone in a hurry.
It could be gone after Roland Garros.
He's got a phenomenal amount of points to defend. So let's talk quickly about, you know, his results since Roland Garros last year, where we say things start to go wrong. So we, obviously starts with Wimbledon. I mean, he chose to skip the grass courts lead-ins, you know, which in terms of ATP events, a little surprising, but given the amount of tennis that he played at that point, probably not shocking. However, he goes to Wimbledon and loses in the third round to Query, which, I mean, cut him a little slack for that. Big server on the grass, although this isn't obviously, you know, your Pete Sampras' grass courts at Wimbledon these days.
But the bottom line is, even if Sam played well, I mean, right, that's a matchup imagine. That we're used to Novak just winning. Yeah, like that's a great matchup winning, for
just
him.
Steamrolling. I mean, like,
yeah.
Yeah. So then he wins the Masters in Canada. But notably, you know, the biggest name that he beat on the way to that one was Nishikori. You know, like,
playing well.
He's playing well, but I mean, look, Nishikori is no Murray. He's no, obviously, Federer is out of the picture at this point. So is Rafa. Then loses in the first round to Del Potro. And look, granted, Del Potro played well, but this was also kind of his comeback, in a sense, and the guy didn't have a ton of matches, and Del Potro hasn't exactly been, you know, lighting the world on fire since the Olympics. I mean, he's played some good tennis here and there. But then goes to the finals of the US Open, obviously a good result there, but also, again, notably, didn't beat anybody inside the top 10 at that tournament. He had a fairly comfortable run to the final,
right?
That involved a walkover of Vasselli, first set retirement playing Yuzny, a first set retirement playing Sunga. I mean, 3 out of the 7 matches he played, he didn't.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
One of them he didn't even take the court, you know?
Yeah.
And he dropped a set to Janowicz. I mean, he beat Kyle Edmund in the round of 16. So, I mean, push comes to shove, his wins at the US Open were over 247th ranked Jerzy Janowicz, 84th ranked Kyle Edmund, and then against Gael Monfils in the semis, and that's it.
And Kyle's a good player, but that was,
well, come on,
that was the biggest moment of his career to date. So
yeah,
you know, he wasn't ready to win that match. Like, he'll be in a different place, you know, over the next year or two as he gets there more often. But I mean, I want to make the case that if Novak loses tomorrow, I guess it is, or whatever, if he loses in the second round to Del Potro and Acapulco, then we're looking at, okay, there's a real good chance that he's going to lose a lot of matches this year, because Rafa looks like a different player all of a sudden. And, you know, all those clay court tournaments where Novak was doing good last year, you know, I'm not so sure.
Well, all those tournaments, period. You know, we had obviously a stretch there where Novak, I mean, by Novak's standards, he's already lost a lot this year.
True.
And it's not just the clay. I mean, Novak was being dominant on every surface. And that's, I think, really, well, you know, when we look at Rafa's, you know, there's that thing with Rafa where it's almost a little bit like he's like a superhero from some Japanese cartoon. It's like he sets foot on the red clay and there's like a flash of green light and turns into, you know, like this kind of meta-human who has these, you know, amazing special abilities.
Meta-human.
You know, well, I'm just saying that, you know, but it's like,
He becomes a much better player on the dirt. There's no doubt about it.
Right, there's just something. He has an aura on the dirt. And Novak doesn't have kind of a safe place to go to the way that Rafa does. You know, he's either just playing really, really well or he's just not. And
well, ironically, to just blatantly cut you off, what's Novak's safe place?
Well,
it's already gone.
What do you mean?
His safe place is Novak.
Oh, yeah, that's right. True, Australian Open.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right.
I mean, he just lost in the second round to Dennis Istomin in his safe place.
In his safe place. Yeah, because he's been dominant in Australia for a while now. Yeah, that's a good point. So that was his safe place, and that's gone.
When Rafa lost to Soderling, you know, it was like Soderling was playing out of his mind. The tennis was high-level stuff. And Rafa essentially was injured, as far as we can tell. And he still almost got through. We still felt like he was going to win that French Open. I mean, this just feels like a totally different thing.
Well, because there's results around it that back it up, you know, as I'm saying. So, you know, after the U.S. Open final, again, loses to Bautista Agut at Shanghai, loses to Cilic at Paris, and then turns around, makes the World Tour Finals, but loses again to Murray. And then we come into this year, and the results, you know, are obvious.
So forget the points for a minute, because this is where I make the Coria comparison. I don't think that he can be like Coria, where Coria basically retired. I mean,
well, yeah, he retired. He just kept playing matches after he retired.
Well, yeah, but he was off the tour in a couple of years.
Yeah.
I could, in some sense, see Djokovic just bagging it and just say, you know what, like, I'm just not that motivated. I've done everything. I've won everything. You know, after he got his French title, then it was like, okay, well, what is there left, you know?
I can't see that happening, honestly.
I can see that being more likely than him sliding down, say, out of the top 30.
Right. Okay, that's fair enough. Like, he's more likely to just, you know, hang up the shoes, call it a day, then he has to slide out of the top 30 at this point. That's probably a fair enough statement. I mean, the big question we really have to ask is what's wrong? Like, what's going wrong for Novak that's caused this big shift in his results, where he goes from being, you know, this kind of force of nature to, you know, squeaking past Clizon. Well,
I think it's got to be in his head.
Well, I don't think it's just in his head, you know. I think that, to me, looking, I mean, the guy's obviously lost weight, and he wasn't I don't know quite the right way to say this. He wasn't a big guy to begin with, right?
He's one of the thinnest guys on the tour.
Right, and he's always been pretty – I mean, he's obviously always been very lean. He's always been very lean, no doubt about that. He's reasonably tall, what, 6'3", I think, off the top of my head.
Yeah, 6'2", 6'3", depending on – I think he's more of a 6'3 than a 6 – listed at 6'2", but I think he's more of a 6'3
guy. Yeah, so he's 6 – you know, let's just say he's 6'3". You know, he was very lean, but not incredibly thin, right? I think we can name a few former pros. I mean, look, he certainly didn't have like Safin's build, that's for sure.
Right, he wasn't like a big, strong dude.
No,
but he wasn't the size of, say, Gilles Simon, where you like everyone knows, man, Simon's a really thin guy with a tiny frame, where
right.
Yeah, he could run marathons, but you know. He's just small.
Right. No, he absolutely
not that he's short, but he's just small.
Yeah, no, he's a huge guy. But he's shrunk. Like, I think he's gotten smaller.
Year after year after year.
Well,
keeps getting smaller.
Yes, I think there was a point. Look, I mean, if we look at what caused this huge paradigm shift in how good of a tennis player Novak Djokovic was, it largely comes down to the fact that he went and got himself in incredible shape. Okay, I mean, he's always had I hesitate because of his net game to say well-rounded game, but he's always had a very balanced game from the baseline. He's always had tools back there. He's quietly improved his serve, but the big shift for him was always the fact that he went and got in incredibly good shape. His movement and his ability to sustain lateral side-to-side movement, we've never seen anything like it on the tour. To this day.
Well, all right, so let's back up from that. I mean, I would argue that...
That was the backup. How do we back up from the backup?
Well, because I want to leave the movement aside for a minute, because I think that there are people that move as well. I think...
Well, technique-wise, yeah. Look, I think there's superior technical movers on the tour, but when it comes to, like, sheer ability to cover the court and do it for hour after hour after hour, there's nobody that matches Djokovic. There are people
right.
that come close.
I get what you're saying, because he combines like a Rafa-like ability to retrieve balls with an Agassi ability to hit the ball off of his shoelaces and
right.
stand on the baseline. So
and
Rafa
and
backs
also,
up and opens
like,
up the court, Novak stays in.
Foot speed. I mean, like, the guy's freaking fast.
He's super fast.
He's super fast. I mean, like, was it New York Times? Somebody did that article recently, and they showed that he was, like, he reached a peak speed faster than anybody else on the tour. Which
Did he reach
surprised
his peak
me.
Faster or his peak was higher?
I'm saying his peak was higher. Like, he had the highest peak speed of anybody in the tour.
Right.
That's not necessarily to say that he actually is the fastest, like, straight line runner on the tour. I'd be surprised if that was
that,
the case. Yeah. I don't think that's the case. But I think it just speaks to how hard he works out there. And he is very fast and he is very, very, very fit. Continue.
So, he has this ability to take the ball on the rise and basically redirect your power from up close and then
and
also
especially
defend.
Up high.
Especially up high, which, yeah, I hadn't even gotten to that yet, but that's a huge game changer because it used to be like if you played Agassi, there are two huge differences versus playing Novak from the ground, right?
Right.
One, you could just spin the ball up and get him to back up essentially or have to put himself in a bad position where Novak can just hold his ground and he can hit a ball that's like over Delpo's head and he doesn't have to give up any ground and he doesn't have to charge forward to take it aggressively on the rise in a way that hurts him.
Right, which and then, Agassi did. I mean, this is one thing about Agassi really lives. I don't think traditionally you could. That was one of these – like you couldn't back him up, but he wouldn't. He would just refuse to because he knew when he stepped back he was going to be in trouble.
He was in big trouble, and that's the thing. Agassi did not defend well.
No, he had terrible – his lateral movement. I've said this before. I know I got downvoted when I read it for this one, but I mean Agassi is probably the worst lateral mover, like side-to-side mover to ever be ranked number one in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anyone.
And that's not a criticism of Agassi.
Rafter?
It's a testament. Oh, come on, Rafter was a beast. That guy's movement was incredible. Look, it's a statement of just how good of a ball striker Agassi was and also just how well he understood himself.
Right.
Especially after he started working with Gilbert, to be able to do all the things that he did despite having, you know, relatively poor movement. But yeah, Novak doesn't have that hole. But, you know, I think again, it comes back to that fitness. It's great to be side, you know, very fast side to side. We've seen guys on the tour before who were very fast side to side. What separates Novak was his ability to sustain that for extended periods of time. I mean, he could run anybody into the ground, and you know, when you're running Rafa into the ground, you know, I mean, maybe against Rafa he's limping across the finish line, but he was getting there, and that's huge.
So this is a tough one for me because we talk about his fitness, and clearly, you know, Novak's going to run circles around, you know, me on the court and really run circles around a lot of the pros on the court. And we all know this on the tour, right?
Sure.
But, and this may be controversial, fitness really refers to this conglomerate of what's going on in your physiology. And to me, what Novak has done isn't really get fitter. What he did was really improve his nutrition and his, we'll just call it like energy systems, right?
Sure. Well, yeah,
he didn't
get
bigger and stronger.
No.
He didn't get functionally really better outside of the nutritional improvements. Like he's not, you know, working with Jez Green, we were talking about Sasha Zverev before, like he's not in there deadlifting hundreds of pounds and building up this kind of fitness.
Well, it's a different, I think it went a little beyond the nutrition, but I think also the improved nutrition allowed him to improve the amount of work that he was doing.
I think that's true. I think nutrition is a huge deal, and I think it's very hard to talk about, and it's not very well understood.
Right.
But
point being, functionally, at the end of the day, like he's out on court, he's able to run for incredibly fast, side to side, and work hard in a way that nobody else was able to match. And that was the thing that separated him from being a good player to becoming a great player who's won 8 or however many slams at this point, right? But, coming back to what I was saying earlier, when we start looking at why he's in trouble now, you know, we say he wasn't big before. I mean, look, the dude was no David Nalbandian. He didn't have weight to lose. And
no, he was like smaller than Fed.
And he's lost weight. And that's a problem because, you know, he doesn't have the fuel system, I think, anymore to go out and sustain the level of play. And now we're starting to see that, I think, especially in the way that it's not that he hasn't played some stretches of good tennis. I mean, the guy made the finals of the U.S. Open and he made the finals of the World Tour Finals. You know, he just won Qatar. But what we're seeing is these drop-offs now where it's like, so he, you know, wins Qatar and turns his training up and loses to Istomin in 5. You know, when we look at the end of last year, we had similar kind of things where it's like he had to have a good result. And then, you know, so he wins the Canada Masters and then turns around and loses, you know, to Delpo in the first round of the Olympics.
So
and then goes to the finals of the U.S. Open and then loses to Bautista Agut and Cilic.
You know, so like you're just, it sounds like you're saying that he's actually fatiguing.
Yeah, and I think he's fatiguing in a way that isn't just like, oh, I'm tired in the course of this match and I can't get over the finish line. And he's fatiguing in a deeper level where it's like, I'm winning this tournament or I'm going really deep in this tournament, but now it's going to take me literally like 2 or 3 weeks to recover from what I had to put out to win this tournament. Whereas right. previously, I mean, it was nothing. He was just turning around. He'd win a tournament and he could probably have gone out and played another, you know, played another 8 days in a row and being okay. Like
right.
his ability to sustain high level tennis week after week has gone away. And
we
that's
know,
really what we're seeing.
For the, you know, as sort of a side note, we're not going to get into this much, but Novak is really big on using all sorts of fancy technology for his recovery.
Right.
So, you know, sleeps in a chamber, and I mean, I'm sure you've seen these articles. If not, you can Google them and find like stuff.
And, from the New York question Times. Also, I mean, is he still doing those things? I mean,
I don't know.
Is there a point where maybe, you know, some of this, and this speaks back to the motivation question when you said, like, is he going to still be here? If he starts dropping, is his motivation low enough that he might, you know, walk away, which I don't think is going to happen. But this is one of these things when we talk about what makes athletes great. And, you know, if we look at the example of like a Nick Kyrgios, you know, there's so many different facets to being an elite athlete. You have to be in a fundamental, like to sustain things in the way that Djokovic did, where he was incredibly disciplined about his diet, about his recovery, about his training. You have to be in a certain emotional space to be able to sustain that kind of, you know, attention to detail day after day. Like, it takes a lot of energy to do that.
It does.
And if he's, you know, if he's not in a position to be able to put that much energy into not just the actual functional act of hitting tennis balls every day, but all these things that surround his hitting of tennis balls, you know, he's getting into a chamber and sleeping there and doing this and doing that, you know.
Right.
I mean, he's married now. This is a question. Does he get in the chamber with his wife and sleep in a chamber then? You know, like
he
what?
Does not.
Right.
No.
So these are these things you have to start asking. Like, is all of this stuff starting to come together? And I mean, being married is hard work.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way around that.
We both know that.
Being married is hard work, and so, yeah. You know, is his focus where it was? And I don't think that he is the type of player who cannot be focused to that level and have the type of success that he was having. There's a direct correlation.
This is what I see. Because you say you see him being physically tired because, I mean, he's, you know, there's something going on with his nutrition that seems like it's not
wasting
right
away.
That's yeah.
what it looks like to me.
Yeah, I mean, even though whatever's left of him at this point is like muscle and bone, it
right.
just seems like, you know, more muscle would probably be a good idea. What I see is him emotionally exhausted.
Sure.
I don't see it as a physical problem. I think that he's making bad choices when it comes to that stuff. And those are probably have some emotional component to them as well.
Right.
And I think that they need to change. And I think that if he's ever going to – if he's going to stay in the top four, then he's going to need to address that nutrition side, I think.
Right, but he probably can't address the nutrition side until maybe he's in a better emotional space. Like he's
that's usually the way that it works.
Right, because it's not like he doesn't know what to do. He did it for a long period of time. The question is, can he go back and do that again? Because he's clearly not doing it now. And,
well,
you know, look, I mean, there's a lot of rumors going around about, you know, trouble in the marriage, this, that, and the other. And we're certainly not People magazine, and that's not – kind of where we're going to
we just don't know anything about that
right
stuff.
And even if we did, like, look, we're not going to sit here and gossip about the guy's private life.
That's
but
true.
At the end of the day, when it comes to his tennis and his preparation for tennis, things aren't happening the way they were happening, and clearly that's a problem.
And you know, one of a coach that we both respect is Sven Gronfeld, who
yes.
works on the women's side with Maria, and we actually, it was the same night we were talking to him having dinner. And he made a big deal to us about the most important part of coaching, because we had asked him, you know, what do you think the most important part of coaching is when you're working with these top players? And he was very clear as day, that it was about management of all the stuff off the court.
Yes, true.
Right. And so this is where I see the problem. Like, Novak can hit the ball better now than he ever could earlier in his career.
Sure.
He knows his own patterns better now than he
right.
ever
no, he's,
did.
He's a much more refined
ago.
Player. He has rounded his game out. The Djokovic smash is slowly improving.
That's terrible.
You know, I'm sorry. Like, it's just
The backhand volley is improving.
Yeah, like the volleys have gotten a little better. Like things
his
are,
service
are,
returns are improving, which is scary.
Right, sure. No, I mean, he's technically a better player. There's no doubt about that. But obviously, again, if you're not taking care of all the stuff off court. So bringing it back to our big question here, the central question, you know, how much trouble is Novak Djokovic in? What do you think? How much trouble is he actually in? It's time to stop conjecturing and make a call.
Well, I think he's going to slide out of the top four.
Okay.
I just don't see – to me, theoretically, he has the ability to go back and retake number one. You know, he has the game to beat Andy Murray.
And it's a good matchup. Like, it's always been a good matchup for him.
Yeah, it's not a bad – yeah, and that's the thing. Like, really, in my mind, he should do it. If he doesn't do it, it's because he's not performing up to what, say, I would be comfortable with one of my players performing. And – you know, those things are always relative. I mean, Novak's supremely talented. He's supremely fit. He's a supremely good ball striker now. He's got very few holes in his games. You know, you can easily
cover... Well,
it's
very hard to expose the holes that he has. That's the
thing,
really.
You can easily cover that stuff.
And especially in this day and age with the courts being the way that they are and the skill set that most players have, it's extremely hard to expose the holes in his game because that largely revolves around pulling him into the net under circumstances he doesn't want to be there. And there's not a lot of guys that really can do that with any sort of consistency.
Yeah.
You know?
So, to me, he's going to slide because I don't see him going back and being dominant again and winning 3, 4, 5 more slams.
Right.
And I think those are the only two options.
Well,
now,
the interesting thing, too, is when you think about it, let's say that he does start to turn things around right now in terms of his preparation off court. You know, when we look at the fitness base that a player like Djokovic traditionally has had and a player like Murray has, you know, there's a point where, you know, there's a level of fitness that comes about as a result of months and months and months of work, sustained work. You know, like that was one of the things I think that really impacted Federer for a long time after his bout with mono was that the mono stopped him from training the way that he used to train and he lost some of his base. And that had a long impact, right? It took him a couple of years to really recover properly.
And nobody talks about that, but mono ends people's careers.
Right.
It ends their careers.
Yeah. So, I mean, we saw that with Sutherland. But so with Djokovic, you know, even if he starts to do things right now, we still are looking at, I think, months of lead time before he actually gets back to where he was. Because, look, he's lost a lot of muscle mass and he didn't have that much to begin with. And, I mean,
he will never get that muscle mass back.
Not on the tour. Like, I mean, it's going to be.
Unless he changes his team. And I mean, he's not going to go through that kind of a change. He's had too much success.
Because the thing is, the physiology on it. If I go into the gym and I do like targeted strength work and I eat very carefully, at a maximum we can put on, what is it, 2, 2.5 pounds of lean muscle mass a month?
I mean...
Right? I mean, I think that's like physiologically they've shown like that's the maximum you can build per month of lean muscle mass.
If it's really lean, yeah.
And he's lost probably 10 pounds of muscle mass, maybe more. And so you're looking at 4 or 5 months for him to put that muscle mass back on. And that's if he's just going in and lifting weights regularly, which given the way that he plays tennis and his, you know, his work on the tour, like that's not going to happen.
Plus, I mean, the guy's got the last decade of basically dominating on the tour. I mean, going back all the way to when he was like number three in the world as a 20-year-old.
Right.
And, you know, he believes fundamentally that stretching is what's important for his game, not being strong.
Right.
You're
sure,
not going to
flexibility.
Nobody's going to change that belief.
I mean, you know, the flexibility is important, obviously. I think that has been an impact on him, but obviously it's one piece of the puzzle, and it's not all of it.
He's already more flexible than everybody in the top 10.
Right. Well, he always, already has been. So coming back to it, you know, I mean, when we look at that, you think he's going to slide out of the top four. I'm not sure I agree, but I think that's more going to be as a result of infighting amongst those guys that are ranked 3 through 10. I mean, he still has a massive point lead. All he needs, really, given the gap, is just some solid results between now and the end of the year to maintain a top four status. And I think he's, even in his kind of lessened state that he's in right now, he's good enough to do that. You know, Stan's always been a little up and down. Milos, I don't think, has the chops to come in and really get up to that 7,000-8,000 point range. Nishikori, again, I'm not sure he can stay healthy enough to do it. And even if he does, just, you know, the weapons. So you've got Rafa slowly, like, clawing his way back up there. Presumably, Fed's going to be clawing his way back up there. you know, Song is just living where he's always lived, which is in that 7 through 11 space. Same with Chillers. Right. TM, you know, I think the kid's still got a little ways to go. It's just when I'm looking down the list, obviously my boy Grigger's coming up.
yeah, I mean, Grigger's going to be top 4, so automatically there's one slot gone.
Right. Well, but the timeline on that, I think, is, you know, maybe this year, maybe next year.
It's going to be tough. Like, when you look at Novak, like, he's going to have to at least make the finals of the French or of the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I don't think he has to do that, though. That's why I guess my point is, I think you've got so many guys that are fighting in that 3,000 to 5,000 point range, and he's still almost at 10,000 points. Like, I think he just has enough there that he can keep top 4, but he's certainly not going to be threatening number 1 again anytime soon unless he has a sharp turnaround, which is possible. I just don't think it's likely right now. I think, you know, we'd be looking at, if he's smart, I think he starts changing what he's doing right now. If he starts changing what he's doing right now, we'd look at a resurgent Djokovic at age 30 in 2018.
But
I don't know that that's going to happen.
Between now and the French, before you even get to the French, he's defending 3,000 points.
I know. I hear you. Okay. But he's not going to get 0 of those. Let's be realistic. He's going to get some of those points. He's just not going to probably get all of them.
But he might walk away. He might lose 2,000 points there.
Right.
And then
– But then he's still, he's still 2,500 ahead of Stan at that point. You know, I guess I'm just saying, like, I think there's enough – like, it's kind of a sense the competition below that is so fierce. There's so many guys right now that are in their relative narrow point range that they're all going to kind of keep each other down a little bit, you know, beating each other week to week, preventing each other from having long, deep runs. That Novak kind of has a little bit of, you know, he's got a big cushion right now. Obviously, that cushion's going to decrease somewhat, but I think he's going to stay top 4 this year. And hopefully, for his sake, that he gets it together and he'll still be a factor moving forward. A big factor moving forward.
I'm really looking forward to this Delpo match because I think that's going to tell us a lot about what's going to happen over the next few weeks.
Well, it could.
Again,
it could.
If he loses this, I could easily see him going out in the second or third round of Roland Garros again.
Just from a confidence standpoint, because he's always been a confidence guy, Djokovic. I mean, I think
the guys on the tour all smell blood.
Yeah,
he draws a clay quarter there.
Well, let's be real. It's smell blood because there's blood in the water. I mean, there's no way around that. You know, I don't know. Delpo is an interesting matchup for him, especially kind of Delpo 2.6 now. I don't even know what version of Delpo we're up to with the slice backhand. You know, that's an interesting question. I think a lot of it depends on how the courts are playing. But regardless, yeah, I mean, I think losing Delpo would be a bad sign. But I guess I wouldn't really take him beating Delpo as being a big sign either. To me, that's something that needs to be happening.
And that's the weird thing, that he could go and win Acapulco, which I don't have him winning Acapulco, and I still wouldn't have any more confidence in the guy.
Right.
That is a weird, weird thing. I mean –
Right, well, because we've seen this, though, these great result, two bad tournaments, you know, two good tournaments, three bad tournaments. Like,
yep.
That's kind of become, you know, the kind of par for the course for Djokovic.
There's a little bit of a pattern there,
yeah.
And it's a little bit – I mean, it's a little bit scary in the sense that here's a guy who's accomplished so much and we have so much respect for his game, and yet it seems very clear that something is off.
Right, sure.
So, some of the players on the tour are not going to be able to do anything about that.
Right, but there's a lot of the now
guys.
Sure.
Exactly. That are going to take advantage of it.
Fair enough. So there you have it. Jake thinks that Djokovic is in big trouble. He's going to drop out of the top 4. I think he's going to cling to the top 4 this year, and I have hopes that he's going to change what he's doing.
No, wait. You can't sign off before telling us, like, I made my prediction. You've been nailing every single
prediction. My prediction is I think he's going to cling to the top 4. I think he's going to finish this year somewhere around 6,000 points. Give or take a little bit. And, you know, I think he's going to start to make some adjustments. And I think he'll still be a top 4 player this year and probably next year too. Past that, a lot of it depends on his motivation state. I mean, you know, he's married. A lot going on in his life now, obviously. I don't think he's able to train the way that he used to. I don't think he's ever going to be the dominant force that he was. Those days are done. You know,
do you have Novak Djokovic winning any more slams in his career?
I think he's got one, maybe two left in him. I don't see him winning 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, but I think he's got one, maybe two left in him. I think he'll probably win another one, and I wouldn't be surprised if he wins two. And I think that's probably about where it sits for him.
I think he's got two finals left in him, and I don't think he's going to win either one of them.
It's a big call. Well, I guess we'll find out who's right. So thanks for listening in, folks. Please drop by the website, you know, technicaltennis.com. You can follow us on Facebook, and obviously – you know, keep listening to the podcast, whatever you're
Send us an email. Tell us how wrong I am.
Jacob, yeah, absolutely. Please do. Please send him an email and tell him how wrong he is. And I'm at glenn@tactical.tennis, one N. And have a great day, everybody.
See you guys.